lights on and away we go. And we're here after the night race in Singapore. You're listening to Forecast F1 podcast. And as always, I'm being joined by Sam. Sam?
Yes, hello. Nice intro, Anton. Lights on. I like that. Lights on is right. We saw another McLaren, well, I guess we could say a nice McLaren dominance this weekend. But of course, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, let's first introduce the other guests on the podcast this weekend. Wissam, welcome. It's great to have you on.
Hello, guys. Hi, Anton. Thank you for having me, guys, this week. And hello to all the Forecast F1 fans tuning in.
Nice, nice. Well, I'm very much looking forward to discuss the whole weekend with the two of you. I think there's more than enough to talk about. So I suppose it's best to start a little bit on the free practice sessions. Of course, in Singapore, we always know that because it's a night race, FP1 and FP2 are usually not considered that representative for the later qualification and the race. But actually, we did see quite a lot of quali runs, even in FP1, also in FP3. So that was interesting. We had a couple of drivers touching parts of walls here and there. We had, I think, in FP1, it was Piastri, if I'm not mistaken. Albon touched the wall as well. We had Tsunoda and FP2 right at the same moment where Russell parted. Well, it wasn't really a hard hit into the wall, but he had some understeer and basically dropped off his front wing.
Yeah, we also saw a lizard on the track in FP3. That was an interesting thing. We right. saw just about Traditions. Everything during the practice.
Yeah, that was maybe the fastest run of practice.
Yeah, when we were trying to get him off the track, he was running for his life.
But like you said, Anton, I mean, practice in Singapore isn't very reliable as in testing and testing grounds in the car. And we did see that because Red Bull and Ferrari both were not quite up to the pace, but we later saw in qualifying Max, and we'll talk about that later. But yeah, I do believe practice was fairly well, went well.
Yeah, actually, especially during the difference between the Friday and the Saturday between the practice sessions were huge for Red Bull, because on the Friday it still looked like they were nowhere, and then all of a sudden in the end it looked like the Red Bull was not as bad after all. And we also had some rain after FP2, so when drivers went back on track for FP3 on Saturday afternoon, actually the track was quite slippery, and I think we saw that throughout the whole weekend, that grip levels were relatively low, and even into qualifying we saw that for a very long time drivers couldn't even match the times that were set the previous day. So quite some low grip, and that would later result. Well, I think it's time to talk a little bit about qualifying. I think it was quite an interesting session, Sam. What were some of the highlights in your point of view?
Yeah, there was quite a few interesting things. I guess going into qualifying, and actually this weekend, if we start with the Q1 portion, we knew that there was a lot of pressure. There's been rumors mounting, obviously, about Ricciardo and his future. And so there was a considerable amount of pressure to see him perform pretty well during qualifying. Unfortunately, he was one of the first that was eliminated. I think he finished in P16. So Q1, we saw a couple of things that weren't that too surprising. Obviously, Sauber, both drivers out. Given their performance over this entire season, it wasn't something that was a big shock. Stroll also out during Q1. So Aston Martin struggling a little bit in that area on the side of Stroll. However, if you flip it to Alonso, he did pretty well during qualifying. I would say in Q2, one of the things I thought was really exciting was actually seeing the comparison between the two Williams drivers, with Colapinto now in, once again, his third race. And at this point in time during qualifying, he actually, I mean, they were very, very tight. I think it was by 0.1 hundredth of a second. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive. I know that Albon earlier was struggling with some grip. He had a little bit of issues. But ultimately, I think that's a pretty decent performance that they're extracting out of the car. And we've also seen a little bit of a heightened pace out of them. We could also look at Mercedes and their result during qualifying. Wissam, what were your thoughts when it came to that?
Mercedes actually brought into Saturday a very well-balanced car, comparing it to like free practice. I mean, who would have thought Hamilton and Russell could get P3, P4 in qualifying? That was a pretty good result. To talk about someone who was disappointing, I think we could talk about Leclerc and Sainz, both Ferraris starting in P9 and P10. Of course, we did see signs they were struggling in qualifying to get temperature into their tires. So signs binned it into the wall. We saw a red flag. And then Leclerc actually got P4, if I'm not mistaken. He was between Hamilton and Russell, but later got his lap deleted. So that was pretty interesting. And seeing Verstappen up there fighting for pole position, Verstappen actually got P2. So that was pretty nice to see, considering the championship battle currently between Norris and Verstappen. And let's talk about the surprise entrances into Q3, Nico Hülkenberg in P6.
Right.
What do you guys think about that?
I thought it was a fantastic performance from him. I mean, we always see one of his biggest strengths is qualifying. So he had a fantastic run. And I think ultimately it was a really great result for him to start leading in going into the race. Anton, what about you?
Yeah, I thought it was a very great result from Hülkenberg. I think we can conclude that throughout this season, he's been showing his strength on qualifying. It's been amazing how well he has performed and how often he has outperformed Magnussen. I agree. The Leclerc and Sainz performances in Q3 weren't as great. I think Sam, on the back of the previous podcast, both of us were expecting the Ferraris to be quite good on this track. I think everybody thought they would be good, given that they were so good on the other street tracks like Monaco and Baku. So that was a bit of a surprise. Yeah, like you said, with some unfortunate for Sainz. I guess Leclerc was his own doing. I think he was off at turn two. So yeah, not such a great result for them. It was interesting to see that when Sainz hit the wall, that actually Verstappen managed to set a time. I couldn't see any yellow flags at first, but his time was deleted. But yeah, as you said, he later after the red flag, and everybody had one flying lap to set to basically have a one-off qualifying session for Q3. That was very interesting to see. I think what we haven't touched upon yet is the result of Sergio Perez out in Q2. I almost want to say back to his old form.
No.
I mean, let's not act surprised. Like, at least I'm not surprised of Perez's performance. I mean, I don't know if we can call it unlucky or just maybe it's just me, but his place is not in Red Bull at the moment because we can see Max taking full use of the car. So it's a bit weird to see like one Red Bull in P2 and the other in P13. Perez hasn't been performing much lately, although he was having a solid performance in Baku last week before his unfortunate crash with Sainz. But yeah, sad to see Perez out in P13 in Q2. Unlucky.
Yeah, he's really struggling in recent weeks, and I think Baku was a bit of an exception. But talking a little bit about good performances, I think Norris set a very confident pole position, actually easily setting a better time than Piastri. I didn't really see. I heard afterwards that Piastri made a little mistake on that last lap in Q3, and that's the reason why he qualified only fifth. But Sam, do you think it's safe to say that Norris is, I mean, not only looking, of course, at the weekend's result. I mean, we'll get into the Sunday after this, but I think in qualifying sessions, he usually does outperform Piastri, doesn't he?
Yeah, qualifying, he does typically outperform Piastri, and I would say that over the course of the recent success with McLaren, the issue that he seems to consistently have is obviously his performance at the start of the race and being able to maintain that position. But it is something that, of course, we'll discuss in a few minutes, but being able to tweak that, I think if that is tweaked on his end, then we're going to see a lot more of a strong position for him. And I mean, he does have An incredibly strong second driver in, well, I shouldn't even say second driver, but in the strength of having Piastri as his teammate. I mean, that is something that also adds an element of pressure. But I think ultimately,
yeah, according to McLaren, they're both first drivers.
Exactly. That's why I stopped myself. I mean, we've talked about this previously on the podcast, even the decisions they've been making in terms of the drivers' championships. But I would assume, especially based on the recent conversations they've had, that they're probably going to be catering, depending on the results for the team, more so towards Lando in amplifying or increasing the points and giving him a stronger chance of finishing in the drivers' championship, potentially winning it at this point. But with that being said, I do think that, of course, Piastri is a significantly strong driver. We've seen that time and time again. And however, this weekend, Lando himself was strong during practice sessions. He, like you said, Anton, he finished very, very strong ahead when it came to qualifying. So going into the race, it was more a matter of can he hold on to the start? And if so, how much of a lead can he take advantage of against the Red Bull? So I guess we can get into the race and talk about that.
Yeah, it's actually interesting now that you say that, because since McLaren has taken that decision that they're going to prioritize Norris, they haven't really found themselves in the situation of having to prioritize Norris, neither in Baku and again this race. They also didn't get into that situation. But you're right, I think it is time to talk a little bit about the race. And why don't we start talking a little bit about the start and the different tire strategies. I was surprised to see Hamilton in third starting on soft tires. Ricardo also started on softs. Of course, he started way back. Like you said, Sammy qualified 16th. And we saw some of the back markers, Stroll, Bottas and Joe starting on hards. And I think, at least I was very excited to watch the start. I mean, we know that Singapore in general is not a track where it's too easy to overtake, although we did see some overtakes, but the start is usually very exciting. So, Wissam, why don't you try and take us through all the chaos and everything that happened during the start?
I mean, I can confidently say it was a boring start, to say the least. I mean, we all expected seeing Norris, Verstappen and Hamilton leading into turn one, so we expected some chaos, especially with Hamilton starting on the softs. So I did believe Hamilton could at least get P2, but as we later saw in the race, the softs weren't really doing good with Hamilton. I think the most action we did see at the start was Colapinto dive bombing it into turn one. He actually made four places, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Made four places dive bombing into turn one. So that was the most action we saw at the first lap.
Yeah, I think that was a bold move from him. We even heard Albon complaining about it on the radio. But then again, yeah, knowing how difficult it is to overtake on Singapore, I thought it was quite ballsy from Colapinto to make that move. Also, initially, Hülkenberg overtook Piastri on the start. But I think within the first lap, Piastri already took that place back. There were a couple of other bad starts. I think Sainz had some trouble at the start, so he lost a couple of places. He was fighting against Perez, if I'm not mistaken. He was behind Perez at that point. Tsunoda had a bad start, who actually about miles out-qualified his teammate. We didn't mention that during qualifying, but whereas Ricardo qualified 16th, Tsunoda qualified 8th. So that was a very good performance. But then again, of course, also helped a little bit by the Ferraris, not really setting any times. But Tsunoda also had a bad start. Norris, on the other hand, was very quickly able to set a relatively large gap towards Verstappen, Sam.
Yeah, a very large gap indeed. And then he continued to maintain that gap throughout the duration of the race. I think that, you know, he did have a few nail biters at some points where he did clip the wall. I believe it was on lap 30. He suffered a bit of front wing damage, which I also thought was a little bit... I scratched my head slightly when it came to McLaren's decision, because he had such a strong advantage at that point in time that when he did come in for the pit stop, if they thought that he had suffered a bit of front wing damage, they would have had enough room to kind of play around with that, maybe switch the front wing, put him back on track to just make sure that I's were dotted and T's were crossed, so to speak. So I was a little surprised that they didn't do that. However, the damage wasn't enough to obviously make a considerable impact. In fact, he even extended his lead further from that. And a few times we did hear his engineer come on and tell him to just relax a little bit. Obviously, they were nervous. But strong, strong performance out of Norris, strong lead. He finished in a considerable, ultimately a considerable lead advantage, and a deservedly so when it came to his win and securing the podium. But I think another, looking in contrast or looking when it came to Piastri as well for out of the McLaren side, I think he had a fantastic drive because for him, he did have to maintain. He was out there longer than anyone else, I believe, in the first stint. And then after that, he was able to, on fresher tires, he got past Lewis, he got past Russell, and ultimately he secured P3. So I think overall for McLaren, this once again gave them a boost in the Constructors' Championship, and we're seeing the continuation of success from that team. Looking over at Ferrari, there were a few things that we could discuss as well. Wissam, why don't you talk a little bit, if you don't mind, about Ferrari, and what were your thoughts when it came to their race overall?
Ferrari, I don't think we had enough faith in the Ferrari strategists, honestly. I don't think anyone expected Leclerc to do that stint, but it paid off, and Ferrari finishing in P5 and 7, actually. Good points for the constructors. It's I do believe it's a three-way constructors fight right now. McLaren are leading Red Bull, leading Ferrari. We might see anyone take it home this year. But Russell did an incredible stint. I do believe he was on the hard tires his last stint. We did see him go past. We did see team orders from Ferrari to switch Leclerc and Sainz. Which was eventually a good decision, I guess. He did chase past Hamilton, which was a 16-second lead also to Russell. 16-second gap, sorry. He did close into Russell. The last five laps was in DRS range, but we did not see him be able to overtake Russell eventually. I do believe Russell is a great defensive driver. That's why Leclerc didn't overtake. But yeah, solid results for Ferrari. Leclerc P5 and Sainz in P7.
Yeah, I think must have been nail biting for Russell, knowing what happened last year and hitting the wall on one of the last laps. But yeah, you're right. That was some very good defending. That was the most interesting part of the latter part of the race, because it was quite obvious that the first three would finish as they were driving for a long time. Yeah, you're right, Sam. I mean, Norris' win was very solid, very confident. I think somewhere lap 8 or 9, his engineer asked to make a 5-second gap somewhere in the mid-teens of lap numbers. And I think he was already on that 5-second lead at lap 11 or so. So, yeah, all in all, a very, very confident win, and I think it shows how good that McLaren is at this point. Of course, it's also obvious that in fresh air, it's much easier to save your tires. So I think that plays a large role also, because otherwise, perhaps Piastri would have also. I was thinking for a while that Piastri would be able to still attack Verstappen, but actually, it seemed that. The Red Bull was very good on hard tires. I think Verstappen had a relatively easy latter part, or even whole race. So yeah, in the end, the gap between Norris and Verstappen is only extended by Norris by 7 points, because Norris did not take that fastest lap. That was taken from
stop.
Him by yeah,
the grand
very
stop
very
that
close
never
to
happened.
It. Exactly. Yeah. Very very close though.
I mean, we did see Magnussen, if I wasn't mistaken. Magnussen went on the softs. He did take fastest lap, but then it was deleted because of track limits, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
Then Ricardo hopped on the softs last lap. Red Bull really wanted to take that point away from Norris, although Ricciardo didn't actually take it because he finished outside the top 10. But yeah, he did take away one crucial point from Norris.
Yeah, it's interesting because Ricardo was even driving already on soft tires. I thought I was while I was watching, I was looking at which drivers were on soft tires, and it was Tsunoda and Ricardo, and I was saying that one of them is probably going to try and take the point away from Norris. I was even thinking at some point that Norris, I don't know exactly what the message was from his race engineer, but I thought Norris himself would pit and go for soft tires because of being afraid that one of the other drivers would take that point away. And that's indeed what happened. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how close Verstappen and Norris are going to finish at the end of the season, and see if that one point actually does matter.
Fun fact, actually, if Norris wins every race till the end of the season and Verstappen gets P2, including sprints, and Verstappen gets P2, I do believe they reach Abu Dhabi on level points. So that's going to be a hectic race if that does happen. 2021 all over again.
Oh.
I don't want to see
Well, I do. Sign me up.
Yeah, so Anton, I would have no doubt he would love to see that because he does like a little element of chaos. But I mean, I agree with you with Sam. I don't know if I'd want to see that going into the last race. That would definitely be something that if you did a heart rate check for me at the start of the race, it'd probably be very, very high. And probably for just about everybody that's in the McLaren and Red Bull garages.
One other thing that I wanted to touch upon is that, I mean, we already talked about Perez's performance during qualifying, and I think after the race start very soon, he made up quite a few positions. He went from 13th to 10th quite rapidly, and I really thought that he would finish a little bit higher, but he seemed to have a lot of trouble. Whereas I was saying Verstappen had a very good stint on the hard tires, Perez seemed to struggle a lot. I mean, in the end, he wasn't able to pass Hülkenberg, and we already applauded the qualifying result of Hülkenberg. I think the race result was probably even more outstanding. I think, you know, with of course qualifying in sixth, being in a Haas, it's not going to be easy to even remain in the points. And I think Ayo Komatsu, ahead of the race, also mentioned that their fight was to in the points. Of course, they had the Ferrari starting behind them. All in all, I really want to highlight that race by Hülkenberg, because I think it was a great race. He honestly, when he came back into Formula One, I wasn't super excited to see somebody coming back who'd already been out. I usually tend to be more happy to see rookies on the grid. I'm glad we're going to see a lot next year. But actually, Hülkenberg is definitely proving his worth, and I do believe he's also a very good choice for that Audi seat. I'm wondering actually to what extent Stake is going to perform next year. Of course, they're not going to be Audi yet. Hülkenberg is already going to be in that car. I believe they're probably going to struggle a lot. And actually, we don't even know who the other seat is going to go to. I think there's a lot of rumors that it might be Bottas. What do you guys think? Who do you guys? Oh, that's one of my notebooks. Who do you guys think is going to take that seat, and who would you give it to yourself if you were the team principal?
Sam, you can go ahead.
Oh, that's actually a really good question. Well, I think that, like you said, I think Bottas has been in talks for a considerable period of time, or it seems like that has been a seat that's been open possibly to him. However, who do I think deserves that seat? I think that, you know, I agree with you, Anton, in the sense of having rookies enter the grid. I think that we've seen, even this year alone, several rookies that have entered and have performed really, really well. We saw Ollie Bearman recently, but we know he's coming on board next year. I think I would be considering Colapinto, to be honest with you. I think that over the last several races, and we've seen him be just trying to do everything that he can to make a statement, like you mentioned with Sam with the dive bomb. I mean, those are the things that I love to see, is someone that's really willing to stick their neck out and be put it all on the line to race. And I think that so far he's really shown that. So I would be considering him, and I think there's a few others that you could look at, but my first thoughts would be Colapinto. What about you, Wissam? Well, who would you be looking at?
I do agree with Sam. Carlo Pinto is a great, well, let's say rookie. He did finish MP11 today, missing out on the points. But honestly, it was a great drive. I do believe he held Perez back for at least 30 laps. Perez couldn't overtake Carlo Pinto. Great qualifying results. I mean, I do believe this is his third race in Formula One, so his third qualifying session. Absolutely nothing between him and Albon. He already scored his first points in Formula One. So, yeah, Colapinto is a great driver. And I would very much consider him for that seat.
Yeah, well, actually, wouldn't have anything against that. Like I mentioned, I love to see rookies. I think he's you guys summed it up. I mean, he's been performing over the last few weekends, and I'd love to see him. And I guess, well, we have a lot of forecast player from Argentina, so I suppose they're also very excited to see what's going on with him. And almost getting into the points again. I think that shows his talent. And yeah, would love to see him. Would love to see him. But of course, they're also looking at Bortoleto, is what was being said, who's performing quite well in F2. And yeah, it's interesting because it's basically the last seat that's left, at least. That has something to do with VCarp Racing Bulls as well, because it's being rumored, and maybe that's going to be already announced when you're listening to the podcast. I have no idea, but as far as we know, this might have been Daniel Ricciardo's last race. What are your thoughts on that?
I do believe Daniel Ricciardo. I don't know if you guys watched the post-race interview. Daniel
Yeah, he was
Ricciardo
very
was
emotional, huh?
crying. Yeah, he was shedding tears, I guess. Yeah, I do believe, sadly, this was Daniel Ricciardo's first race, last race. And him finishing P18 didn't help his case that much. There has been talks throughout, ever since the summer break, there has been talks of Ricardo being out and Liam Lawson actually hopping in that seat. So, well, there you go. That's another rookie on the grid. I'd love to actually see Lawson and what he could do in that VCarb seat.
I think it's also interesting when it comes to Formula One, the fact that, shortly prior before the summer break, everyone was talking about the possibility of Ricciardo being the second driver at Red Bull and Checo possibly being out. And then, fast forward to here, and we're looking at this with the strong likelihood that it's Ricciardo's actual last race. I think for me, I was hesitant to assume that that was going to be the case until I saw, like you said, as well, with some like his driver's interview at the end. And I think seeing how he reacted pretty much sealed the deal in my mind that this likely was his last race. Because if there was any shred of confidence that maybe this was just a rumor, I don't think he would have reacted the way that he did. I think he was awarded driver of the day as well by the fans, and it seems as though everybody is Anton, you're laughing. Oh, I'd like to break that apart and just figure out why, but before I get there, I'd just like to say I think that it's he's made a regardless of of the last several years of performance, he's obviously had a rocky road, but he has also contributed a considerable amount to the sport. And when he was in his prime, he was a fantastic driver that who was able to achieve quite a bit. And I think overall, if this is his last race, I mean, he should be able to look back on it and be really satisfied with what he was able to accomplish in Formula One. But I mean, at the same time, we see there's only 20 drivers. And at the end of the day, everybody wants your seat. I think also the strength of the rookies themselves is so strong that unfortunately, if your performance isn't there, and especially when you're in the Racing Bulls where it is primarily catered, it's always catered to rookies to be able to develop, then this is something that would be an obvious probably outcome for him if his performance wasn't there. I do think The one thing that I hesitate, that was a little surprised upon, was there is only six races of the season left. So I'm a little like, although I completely understand the replacement, I'm wondering why they decide to do it now. Why at this point
Yeah, but
decide
then
that
again, you
switch?
know, there's little races left. But then again, I would also say that, you know, any experience that a driver can get is an advantage. I mean, in the end, what most teams are afraid of to put rookies in the car is because they have to adapt. So of course, Lawson has already had a couple of races last year when Ricciardo broke his hand, and a couple of more races in the car this year would definitely help towards 25. And I think, you know, everybody's preparing for 26, and that's why, also going back to what we were talking about for stake, I would definitely, you know, I would, whoever you're going to put in that car, I would put the driver in that you want to have for 2026 so that they can get used to the car in 25. And I think that with Lawson, it's the same thing. Just to clarify, Sam, I wasn't laughing at Ricardo. The reason I was laughing is because, you know, organizing this forecast, there's always a lot of people who talk and who have ideas, and there's always people who say that, yeah, the FIA should, or F1 should hand out a point to the pole sitter, or they should hand out, and there's also people who say that they should hand out a point for driver of the day, and I think today was a very good example of why we should not do that.
Yeah, because I do think Leclerc obviously deserved driver of the day, but it being Ricardo's last race, everyone was too emotional, so everyone did vote for Ricardo, and he did end up taking driver of the day.
Yeah, and I agree with you actually, Wissam.
Yeah.
I'd say Leclerc as well. If I were to pick driver of the day, I would put him in that spot. I think he had a fantastic drive.
Yeah, I think Leclerc makes a very good case for it as well. So let's settle it on him.
Yeah, I think that was pretty much everything for this race. There's one more thing left I'd like to discuss with you guys and have your opinion on it.
Sure.
The whole Max Verstappen and him not giving interviews and stuff, and the community service fine he got from the FIA for swearing on the radio.
Well.
Yeah, well, I guess it's something we should talk about indeed, Sam. We'll have your opinion first.
I was thoroughly entertained with Max coming out and choosing not to speak during the press conference. I thought it was absolutely hilarious. I think that the rule itself is a little ridiculous, if you ask me. I think that, you know, although professionalism, I think I completely respect the professionalism and the understanding of that. However, I mean, we are also in a sport that in any sport, I think somebody made a really interesting point where they said, you know, if there were mics on football players, if there were mics on other players in other sports during high endurance or high pressured environments, the things that they're probably saying aren't going to be maybe things that you would normally say in everyday life, but sometimes those things happen. And I don't think that the it's not like during these drivers' interviews there's nothing but swearing, but there is going to be a few moments where people are going to say a few things. I don't think that that changes anything other than it's just what they're going. There's nothing. I don't think there's nothing out of context here in what's being discussed. So I kind of think it's a ridiculous rule, and the whole community service thing is. I just don't understand that. So honestly, I thought that it was a really funny response on Max's end during the press conference to choose to not really communicate and communicate outside of the press conference itself. But Anton, what were your thoughts about it?
No, I agree completely on your line of reasoning. I would also say that, you know, I do understand that there needs to be certain rules towards swearing. So what I think would actually be something that should be clarified is to make the distinction between swearing at another person or just swearing in general. Because, you know, for example, when Tsunoda got that $40,000 fine, which I thought was also outlandish, but for calling somebody a retard, I mean, that I sort of understand. I mean, you shouldn't be, you shouldn't be cursing at other people. But, you know, Verstappen's comment was actually about the car, not about anybody in particular. And yeah, I also thought that it was quite funny how he How he protested this whole thing, and I don't think the FIA was prepared for it. It's actually funny. He must have really put in his very, very best performance for qualifying. I mean, I suppose he did that anyway, but you know, in order to make it into that FIA press conference, you need to qualify at least third. So if he wouldn't have had, he wouldn't have been able to make that protest. But I also think that the follow up on the Sunday from Piastri was just that was hilarious for me in the
right.
in the cool down room where he when they were all first of all when Verstappen saw how Norris basically. He almost made it into the wall. He that was the moment where you guys were talking about, I think, on lap 30, where he clipped. He had two moments. I don't know which one was the one on that. He also had some close to incident when he was overtaking, I think, Colapinto as a backmarker. But when Verstappen saw that moment of him almost getting into the wall, he was you know really surprised by that. And then you had Piastri on the other side of Norris, basically gesturing a microphone and asking him without using swear words, how did you feel about that moment? And I thought that was just summing it all up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, honestly, it was hilarious just watching Max at the conference. He was like, we'll talk outside. No answer.
I it actually reminded me of Lewis, if you remember, I believe it was last year when they put the jewelry ban on, and then he showed up that same weekend with just he was wearing as much jewelry as he possibly could to the press conference. It was his way of protesting. So it's interesting to see how they respond to these things. But
or when Sebastian Vettel came with his underpants over his overall, that was also quite the scene.
And by the way, Lewis Hamilton, he was backing up Max yesterday. I think I saw it somewhere on Twitter. He did tell Max that he thinks the fine is ridiculous and that he's backing him up.
Yeah.
And that he thinks that Max should not commute to the community service. He shouldn't do it at all because it's ridiculous. So it's quite funny seeing Max and Lewis bonding over the same thing.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's very interesting indeed. And let's see what happens into the next couple of races. I guess not only the drivers but also the FIA have a little break to think about things and how they approach, because I guess they were also not really expecting this move. Right, so I guess it's time to talk a little bit about forecast scores and see who's the winner of this weekend. But before we do that, and you might have heard about it in our previous podcast, we have a new collaboration with the DRS League and DRS Lane, and that's one of the reasons why we have Wissam on this weekend. And to talk a little bit more about our collaboration and to talk a little bit more about what it is that you do and what it is that we're going to do together in the future. So, if you would please explain to the listeners.
So basically, DRS Lane, we're a Formula One, mostly Formula One and motorsport shop. We're based in Lebanon. We do... you could say Lebanon and the Middle East region. We do have our customers here and there. So we did open up like DRS League, the whole prediction game in collaboration, actually powered by Forecast F1. Thank you, Anton. I think everyone here already knows the game. You predict the top 10 and fastest lap, you get points. And we added a little twist to it. So from now on, actually from last week, from Baku onwards, every weekend, the number one top scoring Lebanese player wins a $10 gift voucher from DRS Lane. So that was pretty nice to have. And hopefully starting next season, we'll have bigger and better stuff.
And just to talk a little bit more about the DRS Lane shop, what are the most sold after items? What are the kind of things that you sell? I saw actually what I really liked. And I want to see if I can order one of these, like the phone holders for your car. It's like a racing seat.
Yeah, that's actually one of our newest items. It's been released for like 2 weeks. Best-selling item. It's basically a phone holder for your car, but it's like a racing seat, carbon fiber pattern. Yeah, it's really nice, and sure, we can make that happen. Don't worry about it.
Ooh, make
What
that
other
too.
kind of items are
I mean,
I see other people getting interested already.
our best-selling category, if you want to say, are definitely the Formula One diecast cars. So everything from like 1990 up till 2023 diecast cars, models, driver figures and all that, driver helmets actually also. So yeah, everything Formula One related, even motorsport related, you know where to find us, DRS Lane.
Nice. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to see not only the amount of Lebanese players increasing for the game, but also some people actually winning the vouchers and making use of it. So let's go into a couple of general stats first, and then we'll also have a look at who was the highest scoring Lebanese player this weekend. But
I'm
first,
excited. I'm excited for this one.
Me
You know
too.
why. Yeah, no, definitely. Well, first of all, we had a new record amount of players again this weekend, as we have had for the last three races. So we had 1,211 people playing the game this weekend. And well, before we get to the average score, I want to ask both of you, how many people do you think correctly predicted this podium in this exact order with Norris on P1, Verstappen on P2, and Piastri on P3. Sam, how many people do you think went with that podium out of 1,211 players?
I'm gonna say 8.
I do think, myself, I do believe I did predict Piastri on the podium. I'm not sure, but it wasn't a very odd podium, so I'd probably say more than 8. I'm not gonna push it too much. I'd say maybe 14 would be fair. 14 players, yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, Sam, get ready for the
Uh-oh.
quiz a little bit later on, because this one, Wissam already gets correct. It was 14 people who had a correct
No
podium.
way.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. If that's setting the
Looks
tone.
first time, but I'm good at this.
Yeah, and actually, by getting this right, or well, the person who gets closest, normally people don't get this right, you did. You can actually choose later on in the quiz if you want to go first or if you want to let Sam go first. But we'll get to that in a bit. We'll first look at the average score this weekend. And because of the podium not being that extraordinary, the average score was a little bit higher than last week. Last week we had an average score of 23.5. We now have an average score of 38.3, so a bit higher. And the lowest score was 4.4 this weekend. Let's move on and have a look at the podium for Forecast F1 this weekend. Let's start with the third step of the podium. We had Eric Murerwa from Kenya, and he scored 78.3 points. And moving to place number two, there's actually an 11-point gap between P3 and P2. That's quite a large gap. On P2 is Rebecca de Roo from Belgium. Gefeliciteerd, Rebecca. You scored 89.3 points. And on P1, and with that, we also automatically answer the question of who is the highest Lebanese scorer, because this is the first time actually in 3 years, and even though we've had a lot of Lebanese players over the last 3 years, this is the first time that a Lebanese player actually wins the weekend. And it's Jason Samour with 96.3 points, 7 points more than P2. And I believe, Wissam, that it's actually a friend of yours.
Yeah, shout out to Jason. Wow. I don't think people will believe this wasn't scripted, but like, yeah, we actually we I was coming on the podcast like a week ago, if I'm not mistaken, we agreed. So yeah, it's very nice to have Jason, the highest scoring player in the world this week, especially after his Baku performance last week. I do believe he was 10 places away from dead last in the world rankings. So he did score like 1,180. He placed something like that. So it's nice to see him on the top step of the podium.
Yeah,
Yeah,
definitely.
actually, you can see this way how things can turn around quite quickly. But Jason's been a regular player for Forecast. Actually, he finished P89 last year, pretty close to where you finished, Sam. Yeah, he actually, well, none of us has been able to actually win this game during a weekend. So that's yeah, hats off to Jason. And if you look at his prediction, to be honest, it's mind blowing. He had let me go through his actual prediction. He had well, he scored the podium correct with P1 Norris, P2 Verstappen, P3 Piastri, but he also had P4 Russell, which was correct. He had P5 Leclerc, which was correct. P6 Hamilton, correct. P7 Sainz, correct. So all of those were in the right
No
spot.
way.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he then went Perez, who finished P10. He then went Alonso, who finished P8. He went with Ricardo on P10. And he almost actually scored the fastest lap point as well because he had Norris. But yeah, as we already concluded, that point was taken away by Ricardo. So no point for fastest lap this weekend, which actually means that the total maximum score possible to score this weekend was 101 points. So with the 96.3, that's really maxed out by Jason. So
What a
really top
result.
score.
Yeah, congrats to Jason on winning the voucher from DRS.
Yes, and maybe ending up with a nice phone holder in his car. I
Yeah, a
don't know,
nice
Jason,
little
if you
phone
have a car, but does he have a
holder.
car?
I do believe he does have a car.
Nice. Well, so yeah, like I mentioned, that's the first time a Lebanese player wins the weekend. It's also the first time that a player from Luxembourg finishes in the top 10, on P6 actually. And if we look a little bit at the scores for the countries, the accumulated scores for countries in the top 25, actually, we had quite a lot of changes. And since a very long time, the podium changes because we've had Argentina, Netherlands, Italy for a long time, but Spain overtakes Italy for P3. And actually, there were quite a bit more changes. With the amount of Lebanese players going up, Lebanon also gained 4 places. Overtaking Mexico, United States, Czech Republic, and France. So they're now in
That's
P6.
nice.
Yes, it is nice indeed. Do you know where Lebanon finished in 2022 and 2023 in the country rankings?
I have no idea. Please do tell me.
So they finished P4 in 2022 and P3 in 2023. So you can already conclude that we've had a decent amount of players from Lebanon, and I think it's yeah, it's great to see you guys moving up some more places. Other than that, Kenya overtakes the Dominican Republic for P12. And the country that has gained the most places out of all the countries playing this weekend was Northern Macedonia, moving up 11 places. Which brings me actually to my next question to Sam, which is can you predict from which countries, and let's go with the top three countries with the highest amount of players for this weekend?
Ooh, okay. I'm going to say I know the last two races it's been Kenya, so I'm going to stick with Kenya. I'm going to say Argentina, and I'm going to say Lebanon.
Well, you got the first one right, and Lebanon is actually now on P2. So we had 94 players from Kenya. We had 78 players from Lebanon,
Very nice.
and India comes on P3 with 54 players.
Very nice.
Anton, I think we have doubled in the player count, right, in the last 2 weeks from Lebanon.
You're right. I think 3 races ago or so, we had around 30 players, if I'm not mistaken. And then last time out, we had 54 or 56, yeah, 78 now. So that's
Yeah,
definitely
and there's
moving up.
still a lot of people who texted me. I do believe yesterday night they wanted to predict, but I did tell them that it was too late. So yeah, let's see those numbers keep going up next race.
Well, we have some time before we get to Austin. There's some time in between this race and the next race, so more than enough time for new people to join on and make a prediction for the USA Grand Prix, which actually is going to be one where there's more points up for grabs because it's also a sprint weekend, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But also for those that have been playing only recently, it's been a while since we had a sprint race. For sprint weekends, the deadline for making predictions is actually the start of FP1. So blind predictions. None of us are going to know anything from practice sessions, which makes it more difficult, but which also makes it more exciting because predictions are usually further apart from one another. And there's also more points to be scored for the sprint races. There's a top of 138 points to be scored. So ready for big changes, I suppose.
Anton, talking about points and predictions, I have a weird request. Can you tell us the predictions for the who scored the least amount? We don't have to say names, but like the player who scored the least amount of points this weekend. Can we go through their top 10 predictions? I think that would be fun.
All right. I don't know. I mentioned before a couple of times who the player was with the least amount of points. I hope he's not gonna be mad at me. It was actually Kobe Aniko from Northern Mariana Islands. Actually, his prediction's not that weird at all if you look at it. I think it was not his objective to not score points. He went with P1 Hamilton. P2 Sainz, P3 Leclerc, so a podium of Hamilton, Sainz, and Leclerc, which got him 2.5 points for Leclerc, because Leclerc finishes P5, so that's 10 points for Leclerc, and that's three places of, sorry, that's two places of the right place, so that gives him 25% of those 10 points. So he scores 2.5 points for Leclerc. And then, going a little bit further down, he actually went with Gasly in P4. That's slightly surprising for me. Perez P5, Piastri P6. He scores his other points there for Piastri. Verstappen P7, Russell P8, Ricciardo P9, Albon P10, and Leclerc for fastest lap. Not the most outrageous prediction, but definitely not the one that got you a lot of points. Well, actually, got him the least amount of points.
I mean, yeah, you'd expect for getting the least amount of points, like it would be something outrageous, like Colapinto into winning the race or something. But no, I think that's actually like a reasonable prediction, a bit like Hamilton winning the race and him starting P3. I mean, that could happen, but I guess it's just unlucky.
Yeah, I think actually Kobe has been scoring some decent points in the last couple of races, so it's I guess just a bad day. Looking at actually, we had one person from one new country. We had a person from Anguilla, which is a Caribbean island. That was the only new country on the list for this weekend. So I guess that brings us, well, before looking at our scores, I want to have a look at the top of the league. So, of course, we've had Rosario Vinci from France already in P1 for a long, long time. He scored 45.8 points, which was the most amount of points from the top three this weekend. So, he remains steadily at P1, and he has a total of 930.1 points now. And Sumit Jaiswal scored 26.3. The player from India was on P2 ahead of this weekend, but after his score being a little bit lower, he drops to P3, which means that our previous P3, Annelie Beumer from the Netherlands, moves back up to P2. She had been there for a while already. She scored 41.1 points, which means she now gets to a total of 904.8 points. So let me do it quick. That's a 25. 0.4 points gap between P1 and P2 at this moment. It has been 38 points before, so I guess it's still possible to get there on a leap, but there's also, like we were saying, there's not a lot of races remaining. Then again, we also still have three sprint races to go, so maybe that can spice things up a little bit. I think it's time to look at our scores of this weekend, and I usually, Sam, I usually start with you. What podium did you go with this weekend?
Ah, well, I went with a Norris win, Verstappen P2 and P3. I went with Leclerc, I believe.
That wasn't a bad decision to go with that Norris Verstappen P1, P2. It got you 57.3 points, which means you were actually placed 86 out of the 1,211 players that we had this week. So that's a very decent
Not
result
bad.
Into the top 100.
Not bad, I'll take it.
It actually means you're moving up quite a lot of places from you were previously P56 in the standings, and you're now P35.
Really? Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I guess I've redeemed myself after last weekend, considering that one was a pretty tough one.
Still, you were outscored by Wissam. Wissam, I don't know if you looked at your points yet.
I did, actually. I did get 8 in the Lebanese standings.
Yes, you got P8 in the Lebanese standings, and in the worldwide overview, you got P43, so into the top 50 this weekend. You scored 61
Very nice.
Points. You actually.
If I had Norris for P1, Hamilton P2, and Verstappen P3.
That's right. And what got you a lot of points was also getting Leclerc and Alonso and also Perez in the right spot. So you got all of them in the right places. And of course, you started more recently. So you were, before this weekend, you were 2,436 in the standings. You move up, well, not 1,000 places, but somewhere around 800 places. So you're now 1,684.
Wow.
So
that's a big jump.
keep on going. And for those that don't regularly listen, so your final position at the end of the year will be your racing number for the next year. So it's definitely, I would say for you as a goal, finish in the top 1,000. But I think if you keep on going like this, that shouldn't be too tough.
Guys, just completely off topic of the points and predictions, Daniel Ricciardo just said to Sky Sports, if Max wins the championship by a point, then I have guaranteed myself a nice Christmas present.
Yeah, I suppose he has indeed. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't think it will getting him a race seat for next year, but
well,
but a nice Christmas present will do.
Yeah, especially from
better,
the world champion.
Better than nothing at all.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I think touching on that topic again, I guess a lot of people are not so pleased by the idea of VCARP being able to help out Red Bull there as sort of their sister team, which I think is definitely something you can. I also find it slightly dubious, but
quite unfair to say the least.
I agree. I think that it is.
I mean, we've known it since Toro Rosso became a team in Formula One, but I do also find it slightly, well, I don't know where to find the right words. Yeah, unfair. I think that's a good enough word for using in this. In this place, what is not unfair is the points that I scored, which was fewer points than both of you. I scored 51.5. I went with a podium of Norris, Leclerc, Piastri. So at least I had P1 and P3 correct. That got me position 192, which means Sam. We were talking about it previously. Do you remember what our gap was after Baku with our total points
much.
Tally for the whole season?
I think it was like, wasn't it like one? It was less than 5 points, was it not?
Yeah, it was 4.6 points. And so now, after this, our point difference is only 1.1 points.
Wow. Okay.
But actually, it's in your advantage now because you're on P35. I'm now on P37. I have been on P35 before, but we're very close to one another. So I guess I'll have to differentiate some of my upcoming predictions. But we'll get to that in a bit. I think first of all, it's time to play the quiz for this weekend. And let me just explain the idea a little bit. So we're going to go over every finishing position. So we're going to start with P1. Of course, that was Norris. And both Wissam and Sam are going to guess how many people out of the 1,211 people playing the game this weekend put Norris on P1. So we already concluded that there's at least 3 people, because all three of us And I guess you can also include the podium with that. But Wissam, you correctly predicted 14 people who had a correct podium prediction. So actually, by that we know that there was at least 14 people who had Norris on P1. Anyway, I won't talk any longer. Who do you want to go? Who do you want to go first in this quiz? Do you want to guess how many people had Norris on P1, or are you going to leave it to Sam?
No, I'll go first. I think I'll go first. I'm pretty confident with myself.
All right, let's hear it.
Norris P1. I mean, that was pretty obvious. So out of 1,200 people, did you say?
Yes, 1,211.
I'd say, I mean, it's got to be above 100 people, like minimum. So I'd confidently go with like 140, maybe.
I'm gonna go fairly high on this one. I'm gonna say 672.
Wow.
All right. Well, yeah. And Sam's been playing the game for a little bit longer. That was a good move, going a little bit higher. It was 508 people who had Norris on P1. So quite a lot. Meaning that Sam, you get the first point. But I expect Wissam to get back at you on the next couple of drivers. Sam, Verstappen, that's your pick.
Okay, I'm definitely going to go lower on this. I'm going to go with 112.
I'm going to stick with 142. Yeah, let's do that.
All right. It wasn't a whole lot of people. It was only 49 people.
Wow.
Went with Verstappen on P2. So
wow.
That's actually crazy.
Yeah,
estimated max.
Yeah.
I guess as a result of the last couple of races, but then again, I was going to say if we look at our predictions, but yeah, Wissam, you still had Verstappen on P3. Sam, you actually had him correct on P2. So yeah, only 49 people.
It does make sense because like his free practice performance wasn't that wow. So yeah, it does actually make sense. About it now.
But you know what's interesting?
True. And
if you were to ask, if the three of us were having this conversation at the start of the season, and let's say he finished P2, and I never would have, out of over 1,200 people, I bet that number definitely wouldn't have been in the 40s. That's for sure. It would have been much, much higher.
Well,
so it's pretty crazy how things change.
I would even argue that actually at the beginning of the season, probably it would have been 49 people because all of the other people would have gone with him on P1.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. It would have been way higher than 600 taking him from P1.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's move on to Piastri on P3 with him. How many people had Piastri there?
Oh, Piastri P3. I'd say around Max's threshold. So like maybe let's go 45.
Okay. I'm going to go 212.
Whoa.
It was quite a few more people. It was actually almost even double of the 212. It was
really?
408 people who went with Piastri on P3.
Oh my
yes.
Gosh.
I'm really bad at this.
No, you're just getting started.
You're just getting warmed up, that's all. I mean, I wouldn't have thought over 400 either. There's no way. That's insane.
And if
I got the 14 podium places right, and I thought, wow.
Yeah, you should have stopped after that. Yeah. All right, well, Sam, we go with the first with the highest finishing Mercedes on P4, which was Russell.
I'm gonna go with 58.
Russell, I'm gonna go with 80. I do believe people fairly took Russell.
So let me quickly count that up. I think, yeah, Wissam, you're closer with this one because it was what did you say? Because I didn't hear it
80.
Correctly. 80.
Yeah.
All right, that's actually very, very close to the right answer. It was 83 people who went with Russell on P4. So you're getting better at it already. which means you can continue with the first Ferrari finish, which was Leclerc on P5.
Oh, I'd say Leclerc in P5. I'm going to go with 40.
Okay, I'm going to go with 145.
Okay, Wissam, you're actually getting better at it because the previous one you were only three away from the right answer. You're now only four away from the right answer. It was 36 people. I think a lot of people had Leclerc much higher in their predictions.
Yeah, exactly.
Which brings us to Lewis Hamilton on P6, Sam.
Okay, I'm
Lewis Hamilton on six. Oh wait, is it Mike?
Is it? Yeah, well, you're both Sam. Anyway.
I know.
Sam. Yeah. That was confusing. Yeah, Sam, please go ahead.
It's actually Samantha.
Oh. Goes first on this one, yeah. All right. Okay. Hamilton. This one's gonna be the. I feel like this could go either way, to be honest. But I'm gonna stick to the 80s, and I'm gonna say 88.
Oh, I'm gonna go with 70. Yeah, let's do 70.
Well, you'd be surprised to learn that there was 243 people that Hamilton on pick six. Yeah.
Whoa.
that's a very big number. So
that's a very odd place.
There's a few surprises. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess what happened is that a lot of people went with the McLarens and the Ferraris up in the top spots, and then after that you get the Mercedeses, but. All right, then we go to Sainz for Wissam on P7.
I'd say 45.
I'm going to go higher. I'm going to say 92.
Only seven places away, Wissam, from the right answer. It was 52 people winning with Sainz on P7.
The ones I'm winning, I'm being very
close.
Yeah,
you're close.
Yeah, you're right.
Very off.
Yeah, that's usually how I roll, apparently.
Right. Well, it's four against three. There's still four questions left, so both of you can still win it. We're going to go with the only Aston Martin that finished in the points, Alonso on P8. It's Samantha first.
Oh, it's me? Okay. I actually didn't know at this time. Okay. I'm going to go with 34.
Alonso in P8. I'm going to go with 50.
And that means we're at a tie. It's 4 against 4. It was more than 100 people. It was 126 people that had Alonso on P8.
Surprise.
I had him on, no, actually, it's one of the first races I didn't have Alonso in my top 10 prediction. But yeah, quite a few people had him on
P8. I think I had him on P8, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right. You had Alonso.
No, I did have him. Yeah, yeah.
That's right. You did. Brings us to Nico Hülkenberg on P9. And that one's for Wissam first.
I'm going to go with a safe option and say five people.
Ooh, that is a good option because I was going to go low as well. I'll say 12.
All right, Sam, you're again ahead because it was quite a few more. There was still 40 people, 4-0, that went with Hülkenberg on P9. Quite a few, actually. That means there's only two questions left. We're going to go with Perez on P10. How many people had Perez there, Samantha?
I mean, I want to go with a really high number, but I don't know. I feel bad
What's
even saying it, but I'm going to say 375.
I'm going to go with 167. Feeling lucky.
Well, there wasn't that many people. You're both overstating it a little bit. There was 43 people that had bid us on P10. But that actually means that Wissam is closer because, that actually means also that the score's still a tie. So it's 5 against 5, which means we're going to go to the fastest lap question. Now, of course, Daniel Ric didn't score any points himself, so... of course, the players in forecast, you know, the concept of the game is that you can score the points that the players can score. So if the player or if the driver, sorry, I'm messing it up, but it's the points that the drivers can score, you can also score as a player. So Daniel Ric didn't score a point. So whoever had Daniel Ric on fastest lap also didn't get any points. But of course, we can still guess how many people had Daniel Ric on fastest lap. Wissam, you can go first.
I mean, that's a weird one to try, but I'll go with four people.
Okay, I'm going to be bold and say one.
All right, there was no one.
Really?
Yeah.
No way, man. Out of 1,200
Yeah, I'm actually
players,
so.
no
Yep.
faith in Ricardo.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, Sam, it means you win it.
Oh my gosh.
No, that shouldn't count.
Yeah, I actually, I'll be honest with you. I wasn't confident when I said one. I was like, it's because I figured it, I did not think that nobody was going to pick Ricardo.
Well, I guess the only way to solve that then is to have Wissam on another time for another rematch. I think that would be the
Yeah.
most fair decision after this.
Yeah, I would love that, Anton. I would love that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and you were off to a tough start, having not ever played this game before, and of course Sam's had 2 years of practice, so that wasn't a fair start anyway.
Yeah, it wasn't a fair start, but good game, good game.
Well, I guess that leaves us looking ahead a little bit, and we already mentioned it, but it's going to be a couple of weeks without any Formula One races on the calendar. We're going to go to Austin next in the second half of October. What are you guys looking forward to on Austin? Are you guys happy to see another sprint weekend? Wissam, are you a fan of sprint weekends? Are you not? What's your thoughts on that?
Anton, I'm a big fan of sprint weekends. Actually, my first ever race I watched live, it was a sprint race in Qatar last year.
Oh, nice,
Oh,
nice.
that would have been
Yeah,
nice.
it would
Hey,
be.
that Piastri won that, didn't
Yeah, he won the sprint race. Yeah.
he? Yeah, nice to have been there.
Yeah.
How was that?
Yeah.
How was that experience?
It was a nice experience, but I do believe I do remember Max. He did win the championship mathematically that race
Yeah,
weekend.
you're
Was
right.
after the sprint, exactly.
That is
Yes, you're
true.
right. He
So he
won it
did
after the
bring that
sprint.
special gold helmet to the race next day. That was nice.
Actually, I'm wondering because for that race, they also the FIA set a maximum lap number count on the tires. I'm wondering whether we're going to have that again because actually, that helped for drivers not having any chance. Well, I mean, nobody was really managing their tires because everybody knew that they should actually get the maximum out of them within the amount of laps. I don't really recall exactly
That's right.
the amount
Where there was a
of
lot of controversy behind that weekend. We were even afraid that the race wouldn't happen at all, but I guess
Right.
we won't get into that this year because I do believe the race is in December. It's December 1st, so much better weather.
Yes, and I guess all in all, the preparations. I mean, I guess they must have learned from last year. Yeah, of course, it's still a couple of races away. We're gonna go to Austin first, and actually, as a traditional Formula One fan, I was never the biggest fan of sprint races, but because of forecast, I am now because it's more points to be scored. It's more difficult to predict because we don't have any knowledge on practice sessions, which makes it, well, for me, it makes it more fun. Sam, what are you thinking ahead of Austin? Are you gonna spice things up with a different prediction to remain ahead of me on in the league?
I don't know, because even when I try to do that, we still come out with the same predictions. So I'm not sure what will be what I'll be doing, unless I'm taking pointers from our mutual friend Ajit in terms of making picks. But then again, I won't be so confident in my result. I think.
I think he went with a Ferrari 1-2 this weekend, so I'm not so sure if that's the way to go for Austin.
Yeah. Look, I'm excited. I love, first of all, I love the sprint races. I love those weekends. I especially appreciate now when it comes to the sprint races, the format that they introduced this year. I think it's much better. It's organized in a much better way. So I'm very much looking forward to it. And I also, when it comes to Austin, I really do love that track. I think it's an exciting track. So to have that, to have the sprint race, I'm looking forward to it. We have a little break, obviously. There is a period of time before that kicks off because that race weekend takes place, I believe, on the October 18th weekend. But I think, like I said, I don't know what to expect. We have, I mean, we've had so many different winners at this point in time in recent history that anything is on the table when it comes to Austin. And then to couple, to include the fact that it's also a sprint as well, who knows what we're going to see. So I think one thing's for certain is it's going to be a really exciting race. And actually, that just reminded me of something. This race that just took place, Singapore, yet again, we had another race where there was no safety car, which
You're right.
is surprising, because we were talking about this in the last episode, how we've seen the one thing we've seen consistently out of several races recently is the fact that there has been absolutely no red flag, no safety car. And well, with the exception, obviously, of the previous weekend with a brief virtual safety car. But ultimately, we haven't seen any serious situations. And I was surprised by that, considering the track at Singapore. But with that being said, who knows? Maybe something like that takes place in Austin. We'll see.
No, you're right. That's actually the last safety car we've seen still been Canada. So that's indeed surprising, because we usually do see safety cars in Singapore. But I guess lots of things to look forward to for the weekend in Texas. And I'm excited. I'm a little bit sad we need to wait with making predictions for a while. Although you can already start thinking about them and start setting them and reviewing them right before the weekend starts. And by that, I think we concluded talking about the Singapore weekend. And I would really like to thank you for coming on, Wissam. And I think it's going to be really exciting to follow the DRS League competition, collaboration, and see if it brings out the best in. It's funny, because there's been a good amount of Lebanese people who've been playing for a good while, and now they're seeing a lot of competition coming on board. So I don't know if people are happy or sad about it, but at least as a country, you're going to score a lot of points.
Yeah,
this was actually lovely. Thank you very much, Anton, for having me. And yeah, the increased competition, people are very much talking about it. I don't know if you're in the group, the OSC group chat, actually. People are all over the place tagging each other. I finished P1, I finished P2, I finished the dead last. So yeah, it's very fun having this kind of competition in the community.
All right. Well, I would only say let's keep it going. And unfortunately, we're going to finish off this podcast with the Canadian anthem again.
Yeah, Wissam, it was great to have you on, and I look forward to the next time that you're on the podcast. I think it went really well.
Thank you for having me, guys. Samantha, it was really lovely meeting you.
Yeah.
Anton, thank you very much. And we definitely will have another quiz.
For sure.
I do need to beat you.
Yeah. I respect the competitive spirit. Absolutely.